I think CBS is making a mistake because I think they're stifling the creativity of fans who love Star Trek.
Fans don't want to be on the outside anymore. We've moved to a new level of intimacy and collaboration and connectedness. We want to be inside the world. That's what virtual reality is. We want to be in it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise.
Since its launch in 1966, Star Trek has inspired intense devotion from generations of fans, with 5 television series spanning 50 years and a 6th set to launch in 2017. And this month's release of Star Trek Beyond will mark the franchise's 13th feature film. And that is just the official Star Trek product.
Sensor scans.
Hard to say, Commander.
From almost the very beginning, Star Trek inspired creativity amongst the fans. Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry expressed deep gratitude for the fans and encouraged their work.
Gene Roddenberry wrote a foreword to Star Trek New Voyages where he said, you know, thank goodness for the fans. And the fans were doing that, you know, through fanzines, through artwork, and then they started doing it with fan films. The first really hardcore Star Trek fan film was 1973. It's called Paragon's Paragon. And there was a carpet layer from Michigan who spent $2,000 of his own money to make a bridge set. In 1985, fan filmmaker in Los Angeles actually got George Takei to play Sulu in his fan film called Yorktown. I'd say the true birth of the modern fan film happened in 2000 when Star Trek Hidden Frontier. They created 7 seasons. They filmed in front of a green screen and they chroma keyed in images of, you know, the bridge and engineering, whatever. And then in 2004, James Cawley in upstate New York spent about $100,000 to $150,000 of his own money recreating the original bridge, inch by inch recreation. And he created something called Star Trek New Voyages.
That fancy ship of yours can get off the mat. It's time we finish this thing off.
Aye, aye, Captain. Helm, firing position.
So after New Voyages, there was this amazing proliferation of Star Trek fan films that started. There was Starship Exeter. There was Starship Farragut. Project Potemkin, Star Trek of Gods and Men, starred amongst other people, Walter Koenig playing Chekhov, Nichelle Nichols playing Uhura. Eventually, you had huge productions like Star Trek Renegades, where it was a 90-minute movie. They had a Westwood theater premiere. The fan films were just getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
All fan films share one thing, and it's this amazing passion for the subject matter.
Alec Peters is the head of Axanar Productions and represents the latest iteration of the Star Trek fan film, one that to studios suddenly looks a lot less like harmless fandom and more like competition. A professionally shot, produced, and acted short film called Prelude to Axanar.
The greatest challenge laying before us is to do what must be done without undoing the dream of the Federation.
The video has 2.5 million views on YouTube, won 47 film festival awards all over the world. It's probably the most successful Star Trek fan film of all time.
Fans were so impressed with Prelude to Axanar that they donated more than $400,000 towards the team's Kickstarter campaign to expand it into a feature film. And then, former Trek cast member and social media star George Takei posted his support on his massively popular Facebook page.
George blasted out there, and in 24 hours we raised another $220,000. It was like one of those commercials where you see the odometer just start rolling.
The Axanar team even landed Richard Hatch, not a Trek cast member, but the captain on another beloved sci-fi series, Battlestar Galactica.
What does it feel like being part of the Star Trek universe after starring in both versions of Battlestar Galactica? Absolutely amazing. I love Star Trek, and being able to play such a deep, profound character as General Karn, absolutely astounding for me.
With more than $1 million in the bank for Axanar between its Kickstarter and Indiegogo campaigns, Peters and his crew began construction on a full-fledged set and soundstage. Meanwhile, CBS and Paramount sprung into action.
I wake up in the morning, I open my computer, I look at Facebook, and I see this article on Hollywood Reporter, and it says, CBS and Paramount sue Star Trek fan film. Then I realized, oh, that's probably us.
CBS had started a war.
The lawsuit alleged copyright infringement and demanded Axanar put an immediate stop to production. They also faced fines of up to $150,000 per violation. CBS declined to participate in this video, but referred us to an interview that their senior vice president of licensing gave to the official Star Trek podcast.
The production started spiraling larger and larger. There's something of an arms race about how many Hollywood names could be attached, how many people that had previously worked on Trek, how many famous actors could you involve? And that's not really in the spirit of fan fiction.
There's a lot of fans who are gifted professionals. When I say professionals, they have professional skills.
Technology has advanced way beyond what we're used to. Now there's the democratization of filmmaking, and then you have crowdfunding, and the studios don't know how to react to it. Like big corporations, they react by rejecting it rather than figuring out how to embrace it.
I don't think any of this is happening in a vacuum. So I think along with Alec Peters creating a studio and with Axanar raising $1 million, there was also the 50th anniversary, there was the new movie coming out, there was the new TV series coming out. There was probably a desire by the studio, let's concentrate on our Star Trek and not let fans have their Star Trek for a bit.
People have gotten used to full, like, 1960s length episodes of, you know, 50 minutes plus, 90-minute feature films. But that's what we do.
But Peters believes that Axanar is protected by a legal concept known as fair use.
There are certain types of speech that should be protected, and you should be able to use a certain amount of copyrighted works in order to accomplish things like commentary and critique.
Dean Cheely is a copyright attorney at the Donaldson and Califf firm. They represented the documentary Room 237, which consists almost entirely of footage from Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, but qualified as fair use because various interview subjects give a constant running commentary about the secret messages they believe are embedded in the film. The firm also represented Escape from Tomorrow, a movie shot on site at Disney's The Magic Kingdom, without permission from Disney. And they notched a landmark fair use case when they defeated Yoko Ono, the wife of late Beatles star John Lennon. In the documentary Expelled, narrated by Ben Stein, they used a snippet from John Lennon's Imagine underneath archival footage of brutal communist and fascist regimes as a form of ironic commentary about anti-religious movements. These examples all comment upon the copyrighted content they utilize, but the Axanar case is not so straightforward, says Cheely.
We're often asked the question of whether or not fan films are covered by fair use. If it's using characters and plot lines and copyrighted elements to simply create a new original story, in this essence a prequel, it's unlikely that that would be a fair use. While legally I think that CBS may actually have a legitimate claim on its hands, I don't think it's in their best interest to pursue it. You don't want to police this type of fanzine to such extent that you're really disenfranchising your audience.
Fan films should be allowed because they do nothing but promote the product.
They can bring us maybe stories that the studios aren't interested in doing, exploring characters that the studios don't really put a lot of energy on, and in a sense flesh out the world and build even more interest so that when the movies from the studios come out, it actually generates more money, more fan interest, and the fan community is enlarged as a result of these really, really quality fan films.
In fact, years ago, Hatch spent his own money to produce a sort of fan-made remake of Battlestar Galactica, despite being told by the studio that there wasn't enough interest.
We finally arrived at Comic-Con in 2001. We had a packed room, and we had these crazy, wild fans from all generations in there, and we played it, and it was the most quiet, pin-dropping moment I've ever had in my life at the end of it. And then we got this explosion of clapping and screaming and yelling, and I thought, oh my God!
He believes that the reaction to his fan film proved to Universal that there was an appetite for more Battlestar and helped lead to the 2004 reboot that ran for 4 seasons, spawned a spinoff, and now is being developed into a feature film.
It kind of shows what you can do as with that passion of a fan. And I didn't know anything about producing, didn't know anything about directing, didn't know anything about any of those things back at that time, but I learned the hard way.
After Star Trek directors J.J. Abrams and Justin Lin both expressed public support of Axanar, CBS and Paramount released a set of fan film guidelines. Some of the guidelines add involving disclaimers and policing the way filmmakers can title their movies. but the ones that most rankle the fans include a time limit of 15 minutes, a fundraising limit of $50,000, and a prohibition on including former Star Trek cast and crew, or any other professionals.
Half of them I don't have a problem with. Ones I do have a problem with, the ones that most fans have a problem with, we have a big problem with.
It seems to me that like they went through every fan film and specifically tried to come up with guidelines that would eliminate that fan film from happening.
The lawsuit is still pending, and production at Axanar Studios has temporarily ground to a halt. But Peters and his team believe that the momentum of technology and history is on their side, and that resistance to change is futile. After all, in the wise words of Spock,
change is the essential process of all existence.
And that nobody's going to be able to slow that down. Just like they can't slow down globalization, they can't slow down that the audience is hungry for more connection.
It's not just us we're fighting for at this point. It's fan films and artists in general.
I hope that the law students today are having to watch Butters sing What in the Butt in their classrooms. I hope that that's the legacy of this case.
This disconnect between the public's view of copyright and fair use and what should and should not be prosecuted versus the copyright maximus view of the law is our generation's prohibition.